Halo, halo, Sacred Icon listeners. We used to do ads for other people, but I decided, why don't we do one for ourselves? Whether you're here listening to us for the first time or you've heard every episode, I'd like to briefly tell you what we're about and how you can support us. We have been doing this podcast since 2019, and with that has come lots of changes. We started as a primarily Halo-only show, but have evolved, combat evolved, over the years to talk about a wide variety of things in the realm of nerd culture. As you can imagine, we've made numerous changes to our platforms, usernames, and emails over the years, so now is the time for me to set things right and give the Covenant back their bomb. You can join our Discord by clicking the link included on our podcast feed. You can also send us an email or a voice message at sacrediconpodcast@gmail.com. We have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/sacredicon, and we no longer use Twitter or X or whatever else the kids are calling it these days. So if you see someone who looks like us there, just know it's not us. Lastly, you can support us on patreon.com/sacredicon and receive a bevy of bonus content. We're so glad you chose us to be the voice in your ear on this particular day and hope you enjoy the episode ahead.
Everybody, welcome to another goofy, spectacular episode of the Sacred Icon Podcast, where we talk games, a little bit of movies, but mostly just the games. And that's what we're here to talk about today, guys. We are back to talk more of our FPS series. I can't remember the name of it, but if you look at the title, it's there. That's right, guys. Dr. Disturb has prescribed me being down with the sickness, so I got a little bit of a cold this week. You'll have to forgive me. But joining me, as always, is my buddy, my pal, my friend, Brian Arvett, the Triple Threat. Returning back, though, is our buddies. The gentleman leading this that we're having such a fun time with, it is Corey and Diente. Welcome back, boys. How's your week, man?
Better than last week.
Yeah.
Good. Hey, before we dive right into this thing, hot and fresh, guys, do you agree with the sentiment that bologna slices are hot dog sandwiches? Discuss.
Sure. Yeah, I could see that.
A hot dog sandwich is a hot dog that's been chopped and placed on bread.
Yeah, you put some ketchup on it. That's pretty good.
Bologna is its own unique thing. Hot dog adjacent, yes. A big hot dog, sure. You know, if you had a tube of bologna and you cooked it, you could tell me that was a big hot dog. I'd buy into that, but
I'll never forget our friend Justin. He's been on the podcast once or twice. He always wanted to eat somewhere different. Like, we went out to eat. Everything. He never wanted to go to the same place twice. And he wanted to go to this little rib shop that was being held up on the side of the street. And
was it Arthur's Deli? No, it was Rib Shop. I'm sorry.
No, it was in Kelowna, but it was just this little rib shop set up. And they had these super long hot dogs. And he ordered this hot dog. And he gets the hot dog. They deliver it to him. And it's like a regular size bun. And there's like a whole ass wiener hanging out the side of each side of the bun. Like, I mean, the wiener's three times the size of the bun. And when they hand it to him, he gets the widest eyes and mouth agape I've ever seen. And the second he turns to me, I was like, dude, the face you were making,
grab your phone.
The face you were making was, it only said one thing, and it was, I can't believe this whole thing's going inside of me. That was the look on his face. And I kept saying that to him the rest of the day, and it wasn't as funny for him.
That's what she said.
Yeah, basically. But, cool. Anyways, guys, so we are going to go in. I'm going to pass over to Deante because he's leading this. But we're at the year 2004, and if you're a first-person shooter fan at all, you'll know this is a ginormous year. So we've decided to dedicate this one-hour podcast distinctly to just the year 2004. So Deante, take it from here. What came out this year?
Away, baby. All right, 2004, like you said, was a huge year. A lot of bangers came out. Some smaller titles too. So we'll list them off and we'll go through them. The original Far Cry came out for PC. Escape from Butcher Bay, which is the Chronicles of Riddick game. Doom 3, Killzone for PS2, Half-Life 2, GoldenEye Rogue Agent, Oddworld Stranger's Wrath, Painkiller, Star Wars Battlefront, and Halo 2.
Ooh, that's a hell of a list. Corey, you want to go first? Pick a game.
Pick a game. Well, the first one on this list here that you said is Far Cry OG. Did anybody else play that game?
Was that one in arcades or no?
I think that was the one, yes. Really? There's a distinction between that one and Instincts.
Yeah, I feel like I played the original Far Cry in arcades, but then, yeah, on console, I think it was just Instincts.
I've only played the demo of that.
I never fully experienced what the cultural impact of this game was. Do you guys know? Like, was it a big thing or kind of big or not at all?
It was kind of similar to the cultural impact of the Crysis games. The way that those are just like a technical showpiece.
Yeah.
Maybe not the most developed gunplay and such. Not the greatest movement. But they were huge open world. And for 2004, like, the size of these islands that you were roaming around was very impressive, and there was, you know, it's jungle setting, so there's lots of foliage and stuff. Technically, it did look great. My PC had a hard time running it, and it was like new as of a year earlier, so that kind of sucked going from Call of Duty to this.
Like, you're like, oh, man, I would like to play this, you know, PC.
But I think that's become, I mean, that's the legacy, right, of those Crytek games, which the people who made Far Cry would then go on to make Crysis, while Ubisoft kind of Assassin's Creedized Far Cry for the masses.
That's true.
But that original one, it is different. It definitely lays a lot of the groundwork, and you can see the building blocks that were there for 2 and the ones that came after. I didn't ever beat it. I did play Instincts later on the Xbox. It was not as good because it felt like more of a corridor shooter. Not that it was a corridor shooter, but it was a lot less open.
Downscaled.
It was definitely downscaled, yeah. And it was mostly fighting the, like, monster creatures on the island instead of humans, which I found just less interesting. But yeah, fun game. And getting into a boat and riding to a new level, and then the level opens with you in a boat and you ride up on an island, you know, there's something just very appealing about that, about having your vehicle and knowing you can always go back to it and ride off to safety.
What about, other than, like, briefly in an arcade, did you play it much, Deante? What about you, Josh? You guys?
I have not played the original, but I know you can get Far Cry Classic on the Xbox through the Xbox Live Arcade now. So
yep.
I did buy that. I haven't played it yet, but I did play a lot of Instincts.
Cool.
Yeah. Love Instincts.
Josh?
Love
Instincts. Just Instincts for you, Josh?
Just played the demo. Yeah. Just played the demo way back when the Classic came out or whatever, and didn't really grab me as much. I'm sure it was good for its time, though. That type of game, really.
I just want to clarify, Brian, when you say you played that game in the arcade, do you mean the Xbox Live Arcade?
No, I mean like physical, in a movie theater. Like, yeah, physical.
I can't even imagine how that would work.
Maybe it was like a different game, but I mean it had the same artwork as the original Far Cry, and I played it around that time, like when I was like 10 or 12 or whatever.
I'm pretty sure Regal Cinema that just... Brian, did you know that Regal Cinema closed down? Out there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, the Moline? I didn't know about that.
Yeah, but anyway, like, at the top of the stairs when you'd go up, they had, like... The last time I was in there, I think they had... It was like a Far Cry design on the outside, but when you go sit down, it's a Jurassic Park game. Like, the interior, the actual game is Jurassic Park, but outside, they're just like, we're not going to take this paint off. Fuck it.
So weird.
I'll kick us off into another game. I'm kind of saving Half-Life 2 and Halo 2 for the, I don't know, last 40 minutes of this hour
bang.
Episode.
Gonna take them.
Doom 3. This is one that it's weird how much influence it has in my life, because I wouldn't have expected that from a game like Doom 3, but like, I grew up as a Doom kid playing Doom 1 and Doom 2 on the PC all the time. So when there was a Doom 3 and the graphics looked insane, me and my little brother were just like, holy crap, like, will this be the best game ever because Diablo 1 and, or not Diablo, Doom 1 and Doom 2 are so good. I mean, this is Doom 3 and the graphics, you know, oh my gosh. And I remember it coming out. I didn't have an Xbox original at the time when it first came out, and we bought it for PC. And that's just when we were dumb and just thought, you know, even if we don't have a good PC, we'll just force it to work. And it wouldn't. Like, it wouldn't even fully install because the freaking disc couldn't even detect the hardware on the computer that it needed to function. Oof. So we couldn't even get it to work. Actually, I think I want to say maybe we did get it, like, partially installed, and, like, we tried to walk and we took one step forward and the whole game would just crash because I didn't even have a graphics card. It was awful.
Couldn't even play so it sad. 4 frames a second, man. That's tough.
Yeah. Couldn't
the
even
way
do
Doom
it.
Is meant to be played.
Right? Like, Corey
trying to put
it.
The CD in the floppy disk drive.
But, yeah, so wasn't able to play it. And then it wasn't too much, probably a year later, probably 2005, managed to get a used copy for the Xbox. Had an Xbox then. Got Doom 3, got it. Of course it ran great because it was an Xbox copy. And discovered really quickly, game was way too scary for me. I mean, I was, like I said, about 12. I was terrified. I mean, stuff, you know, this is more, they took Doom into a horror, action horror direction instead of just a straight up like shooter. You had limited ammo. You had a flashlight that could only be held alone. You couldn't have a flashlight and a gun at the same time. Enemies came out usually one at a time. Later in the game, they came out like two or three at a time. But it wasn't hordes of enemies. It was strategically placed horror. Couldn't really get through it at all. I remember trying to stand at the back of my bedroom with my controller and the lights on. Like, maybe I can play it this way. No, still too scared. So basically, that did not get to play that game much past the opening for a few years. And then finally, I had enough balls when I was 16 to play it on PC. I got it on a Steam sale on PC for like dollars, and I played it on PC. And I still jumped a lot. I was still scared, but like I got through the whole game and beat it. But I had this like pretty much since from the moment Doom 3 came out, 2004 on, like it was part of my life. It was just like, oh, I can't play it, or I'm too scared to play it. Eventually beat it, and I just love the game. For me, it wasn't what Doom fans wanted, and due to that, to this day, it's still the black sheep of the series. It doesn't play like other Dooms. It's a first-person shooter where you fight, you know, demons on Mars, and you go to hell and fight them and everything. But like I said, it's limited ammo, flashlight, horror, just a few enemies on screen. But it was a really, really good game, and it definitely took inspiration from Half-Life. Not that it was as good as Half-Life, but took inspiration from Half-Life, and it was just a lot of fun. And to this day, it's a game I still replay. I still enjoy. I really wish I was able to play Doom 3 on the Xbox, had online Xbox Live co-op through the campaign. There's no other way to do it. It's not on PC at all. It's not in any re-release.
Wait, you can do it on Xbox, you're saying?
You could do Halo-type co-op through the whole campaign on the Xbox original if you used Xbox Live.
But not the new version?
There's no other way.
Oh, no. Really?
There might be a PC mod. There probably is. But like
no, on the Series X version of it, you
no.
can't?
It was only Xbox original, so I'd love to experience
with that.
That
shit, man. That sucks.
Never got to. But anyways, long story short, that's at the very, very bottom of my top 50 games, but it's in my top 50. I love Doom 3. Do you guys have anything to say about Doom 3 before we pick another one?
Yeah, go for it, guys.
I had a pretty similar experience to you. I wasn't 12. I think I was like 16 when it first came out and when I first started playing.
He's like, I wasn't a little bitch like you, bro.
No, I was a little bitch. I turned on the lights. Like, get that first scene where that imp comes crawling across the glass when it's all dark. I'm like, holy shit! And yeah, I'm like, no, nope, give me a few minutes. And I turned the light on. I played it a little bit longer. And I was like, okay, we'll come back to that. I never got back to it, but I was like, it's a good game. It was scary. I remember, like we were talking about before, you had to pull out your flashlight and put it away in the original one. And that was definitely nerve-wracking. Like, pulling your flashlight, you see a dude running at you. You put it away, shoot him, like, get the bright flashes, and the guy goes down, and you pull your flashlight out, and here comes another one. Like, oh my gosh! You know, trying to...
Yeah,
it was nerve-wracking.
It's freaky. Yeah, it was a really scary game. Of course, the newer editions, if you buy Doom 3 now in any version that's not the original Xbox version, or you might be able to snag the original PC version through Steam. I'm not sure. It might have been discontinued. All versions of Doom 3 now, they have upped the ammo count and ammo pickups and made the flashlight strapped to your guns, which I think there's two fair arguments to that. A lot of people will say that's not the purest experience. That's not how the game was designed. It's got to be the OG or
not
nothing.
A true fan.
I totally respect that because it does change the game a bit. It's more fast-paced and less scary with the new edition. But I do prefer the new edition because it blended the Doom 3 horror a little closer with what I expect from run-and-gun Doom. So I like the BFG edition. Corey, you got anything to say about Doom 3?
Yeah, I played through it when it was pretty new. I liked it. Didn't love it, but I'm thinking about your story. You said that you first played it when you were 12. It reminds me a lot of my experience with Resident Evil, which I played in 97 when I was 12, the original Resident Evil, which I played at a friend's house. He had a PlayStation. I didn't have one. Scared the piss out of me. Couldn't play it afterwards. Really wanted a PlayStation after that. When I finally did get it, was also scared, but like, I'm thinking about that experience where the game is scary because of tank controls, basically, and a zombie might eat you and you'll lose progress, versus what you were experiencing playing Doom 3 as a 12-year-old. I would have to say, just objectively, at that age, Doom 3 is a way more terrifying experience because of how fucking in-your-face that game is. You know, you pull your flashlight out. Sometimes you get your flashlight up just in time to see teeth, like, enveloping your screen.
Oh.
You know?
And the first demon you fight, it's literally, it builds up to you going down to the bottom of this base at Mars, and there's a guy, a scientist on a computer, and demonic spirits start circling through the sky, and then they fly up into the scientist, and he immediately becomes possessed and starts trying to kill you. That's how it starts. And, like, for me, I was like... No, I can't. I can't do this.
Yeah, it's not like the concepts are necessarily so mature and like so terrifying, but like the speed at which they come at you and the fact that it's interactive makes it a little overwhelming.
Yeah.
So you get terror on top of like panic in a way.
Yeah, and the sounds. I mean, if you get, of course, I didn't get when I was 12. I didn't get this far, but like you get far enough later and you start to hear babies crying. And then you go down a corridor, and there's like a demon baby crawling across the floor. It's just creepy shit, man. So
that would scare the fuck out of me, bro.
It's creepy. Josh, this is one you want to play, right?
This is one I've really wanted to play for a long time. I feel like I'll love it. But, you know, I'll just use this moment for Doom 3 to just say, like, in terms of you guys talking about how this shit has creeped you out and the way you, like, Brian, you were talking about standing up at the wall and shit. I think I said this before on the podcast before, but I remember, like, this is, like, when I was a teenager, like, Googling, like, alien autopsy stuff, and I got myself so fucking paranoid. I, like, positioned my chair in the corner of my room while I browsed the internet so I could see in every direction because I was so paranoid. And all this stuff that was, like, being talked about in Congress or whatever recently, like, and I was obsessed with that stuff, and I was consuming all the details and watching all that stuff, and... Like, one of the nights I had myself so creeped out, I turned on my lights and I put on The Phantom Menace. And, like, I dozed off and I remember waking up and I was like, with one eye open, I was like, Jar Jar, you know? And I was like, oh, I'll go back to sleep, you know, because I was so at peace now and so comfortable. I had got myself so freaked out. And I do that anytime I watch something, like, scary or just... You go on those, like, rabbit holes, you know, of, like, information with something, like a Wikipedia article or something. But
yeah,
Doom 3, go ahead.
I'll say, even at this age, I mean, I think in the last year, I don't even know what it was, but I was looking up something super creepy all night on my phone in my bedroom, you know, as a 31-year-old man with my wife, and when I get up to pee, it's like, I gotta run from my room to the bathroom.
It'd be a good Halloween episode, bro, because
something could come out, you know?
I'm 34 years old, and there'll be times I'm just like, my foot's hanging off the edge of the bed, and I'm like, and I'm looking at my ankle, and I'm like, my brain's like, wouldn't it suck if there was like a hand that just came up there and grabbed it? And I was like, fuck, man. I was like, no, you know, and then suddenly I got to put like my feet under the blanket and like tuck the blanket under my foot. But anyway, Doom 3, guys. Wow. That's a game I've always wanted to play. I remember that being like promoted way back. It's the id Tech, right? It's the engine. Yeah. I love that engine so much. We saw that in Quake 4. We'll get to Quake 4, I think. But I love how the game just visually looks. I love the way those games look. But I can't wait to play it. I can't wait.
Sounds like 2023 may be the year for Josh to play Doom 3. It's on Steam. It's also on the Switch, and it's on sale 60% off right now.
Might have to stream that. Might have to
$3.99.
I think it'll be Josh's favorite. Because I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, Josh, I don't think you're too heavily attached to any Doom.
I never intend to be the contrarian, but somehow I get lumped into that, and I think that would probably... I'd be like my favorite Doom is Doom 3.
I think it's a worthy favorite. Like, it's nothing like the rest, but it's a It's a great game.
Yeah, that would. what's the
Deontay,
next
one? No. Why don't you quick fire a couple of these smaller ones? Because I know we're going to need a lot for Half-Life 2 and Halo 2.
All right, so we'll do Painkiller. I never really played. I know that was like a really shoot 'em up game, which is like pretty much hordes, like enemy hordes through levels, and you
like that one,
yeah.
Corey?
Yeah. Fuck yeah, man. You're playing a metal album cover with a gun that shoots wooden stakes. And you just fucking... It's awesome. It's just really so heavy metal. It's just the most heavy metal
I hear like Four Horsemen from
played.
Metallica in my head right now.
Yeah, sure.
That's what I hear. Yeah. Anyway, go
and
ahead.
That one spawned a whole series. You got a few of those that are out.
It's called Painkiller?
Yeah.
Wow, I know nothing about it. Nothing.
Then you got... Oddworld Stranger's Wrath, which is like an Oddworld game, but it's set in the first person. You're a bounty hunter.
Is that a popular one in the franchise? Like, because I know people love these Oddworld games, but like, is this one a popular one or no?
I feel like it is.
It's the only one I've played.
Is it the only first person shooter?
It's the only one. Yeah, the only first person shooter that I know of. Most of them are like side scroller kind of puzzle games. This one is very
so Munchies
much like
Odyssey
a Western.
Is not a first person.
Is it Munchies? You call it Munchies?
I thought it was
White Castle.
Yeah, is it Munchies?
No, not Munchies. I always called
Munchies
it Munchies
Odyssey. We got Munchies Odyssey. We got Munchies Odyssey at home. It's just a fucking Munchies Odyssey. Some like fucking stoner crap version of like Munch's Odyssey with like
I've been saying that for
FF7
like 20
on the
years,
cover.
Bro.
Fucking bootleg Japan version. Munch's Odyssey. What's it got? Takeys? The fucking chips or whatever? I'm sorry.
It's those peanut butter pretzels.
Oh, yeah. Shit. Yeah. Oh, it reminds me of like this photo I saw. It was like it was like a bootleg shirt and it said Final Fantasy VII and it had the logo and everything, but it had Edge and Christian from WWE and then it had a photo of Billie Eilish like with it. I was like, what? Okay.
You know, I'm having a little bit of a Mandela effect here because I also remember the game being called Munchies Odyssey.
Munchies? Okay.
Really? Okay, good. I'm not alone.
But I think it's because Odyssey, the way they spell Odyssey, it has two E's at the end.
Sure.
And I think I'm just kind of attaching that in my child brain. But also, have you all seen the movie Munchies? It's like a Gremlins knockoff from the late 80s or early 90s.
Google that real quick.
Yeah, Josh, watch that
you
like
would
tonight.
Like this. I watch that movie
a lot. You will have
it
on Letterboxd by 10 tonight.
I'm very flattered by that. Munchies movie.
It's funny, like, if I tell Josh to watch this really awesome, good movie, he won't do it anytime quick. Wow.
Look at that nightmare fuel,
you
bro.
Don't even,
that's like a
you don't even
that's
see
like
that
Mac
thing.
And Me, that knockoff of E.T.
It looks like Mac and Me, yeah. You don't even see that thing in the movie. Like nothing that even looks like it.
I'll seriously tell Josh,
what
I'll be
is
like,
this?
Hey, watch this movie, it's great.
I don't
looks
know
like Five Nights at Freddy's.
Oh my god, I gotta post this in the Discord later. That is nightmare fuel. That's the shit at the end of my bed. That's my sleep paralysis demon,
I
bro.
I can see it.
Motherfucker hiding up in the corner. I'm like, what the
didn't
fuck
I
are
tell you?
You?
He's that's a he's in Doom 3.
That's gonna
no,
be fun.
I literally will tell Josh about this great movie and he'll be like, oh yeah, I should watch that sometime, never gets around to it. Then literally like 2 weeks ago I'm like, oh yeah, my parents love this movie RV, and Josh is like, oh yeah, that movie. And I'm like, yeah, it's this movie about freaking Robin Williams and he rents an RV and gets poop all over his face.
Robin.
It's like a really dumb comedy, like whatever, and Josh is like,
I watched it.
I think I'll watch that tonight. He freaking watched it immediately. Had a Letterboxd review. I'm like, damn, you ain't watching The Godfather, but
well,
you watch
RV. Well, to be fair, Brian's favorite movie is What About Bob, and I've never watched it. I've always wanted to. I've always meant to, but I've just never watched it. RV, fair. They got me, man. Got me with that Rob Williams peddling out.
You
got
to be in the mood for certain
but I'm not a crunch.
The Godfather.
What else we got, Deontay, for some first-person shooters?
All right, I'm going to throw Star Wars Battlefront in there. It's third-person shooter, but you have the first-person option. One of my favorite games.
Yeah, that counts.
I'm just going to throw it in there because I have played
that's
it
a big
first-person, and it's a really good game.
Strangers yeah, if I can talk on that real that quick, well. I mean, I loved that because, you know, when that came out, it was really, really cool. The fact that it offered that, like, they advertised it as third-person back in the day, but the fact that you could switch to it, I often usually played in first-person. Had a lot of fun with it. It felt really good in first person, and there's not a lot of games I remember back then that really did both, and they did both very well. Most people who played that played in third person. It was a different way to play it, and even though it didn't have a story to it, really, it was very light on the story. It was still just a blast to play, and they improved a lot of that with the next one we'll get into in a future episode. I think, in 2005.
You can tell, though.
A lot of people still think this is still people's favorite. That's all I was going to say. First one.
Yeah, this one's my favorite. I like the progression in the second one better, but this one is my all-time favorite. But you can tell that some of the graphics are missing like pixels. So you're like, oh, this definitely wasn't meant to be first person, like specifically. Mm-hmm. But it's still fun. I mean, it's a good game.
Back in the day when they added a lot of different features to games that just kind of went underappreciated, and now it's like, if we get that stuff, it's a godsend. You know, it's like a Madden game, like having an actual in-game radio talk show. That was a thing back in the day, and now it's like, don't know what that is. Never heard of that. But yeah, getting a different mode of a way to play in first person, wow, unheard of now. But anyway, yeah, good game. What do we got next?
We got Killzone.
Down to the final two, Killzone.
We got
this. Yeah, I find this game so interesting because
why, Brian?
And I'm waiting to be corrected by Corey, because I feel like Corey's the one to do that. If
Corey's like,
slip up on after.
Call me up for it.
Corey's like, geez, you little asshole. No.
That's Killzone, your opinion.
To me, Killzone on the PS2 feels like the most run-of-the-mill, generic, boring, not worth talking about first-person shooter ever. But it was a Sony exclusive, and it was the seed that led to Killzone 2 on the PS3, which, while Killzone 2 was nowhere near any kind of zeitgeist familiar to Halo at all, Killzone 2 was a pretty big release for the PS3, and it has a very, very high Metacritic score. So I feel like this game on the PS2 is just kind of this bland, forgotten nothing burger of a game that led to a franchise that ended up mattering quite a bit for Sony. Is there anything about this game more redeemable than what I said? I've played it, by the way.
It's an interesting timepiece to look at. They had another game that came out. It was either a month or two before or after Shell Shock NAM 67, which is a third-person shooter Vietnam game. I believe that was their first release, and then this one came out shortly later. But yeah, like you said, pretty bland, pretty forgettable. I remember there being quite a bit of hype because it had really good screenshots at the time. And this was when people still had a hard time downloading high quality videos on the internet. Came out very middling, controlled not well. But then when you had that big blowout of a presentation for the PlayStation 3, of course Killzone 2 was, just because it was an established name, first person shooter on the platform, it's ready to go. And even though that was a fake demo, they came pretty close to hitting that visual target. And did a lot, just because there weren't a lot of, and even these days there's even less, but there weren't a lot of games that you could buy just to show off how good this looked, you know, and that was one of them.
Killzone 2, something I still hear people reflect on, and I mean, a lot of the reviews are 9.5 or higher for that game. But Killzone 1, I mean, it's almost like, I feel like Killzone 2 came out and people were like, there's a Killzone 1? You know, like, it was just such a... Especially when Killzone 1 was this came out the same year that Halo 2 did. So, we've had 3 years of playing Halo 1, and, you know, not to be a fanboy, but, Killzone 1 compared to Combat Evolved, Killzone 1's dog shit.
Killzone 1 kind of, I mean, I have a lot of nostalgia for it. I played it a lot when it came out.
Oh, really?
I went back and booted it up.
I'm sorry, I called it dog shit.
No, you're fine.
Go ahead, Deontay.
I went back and booted it up on the PS2, and it is jank. A lot of clunky controls. Feels like a alternative World War II thing. You ever watched the movie Mutant Chronicles? Kind of felt like that.
I haven't.
Like the Thomas Jane movie. But it was, I remember Templar, and I remember all the other characters, and it wasn't phenomenal game, but it was decent shooter. I'd probably give it a 6 or 7 out of 10. You know, it wasn't...
Okay, so would you say, because you're probably the biggest fan of that game here, if Halo Combat Evolved was a 10, is this still a 6 then?
Like a 5 or a 6, probably.
Okay. Hey, about half is good. I'll take something. Combat Evolved is a good game.
It doesn't have nearly the same movement options or even quality as Halo. But
will say the art, though, it was like evocative, even if it wasn't the most original thing. Definitely had that kind of alternate World War II thing going on, like you were saying. A lot of fog and like almost trench warfare going on with the hell gas just showing up. But those dudes with their goggles, like, they were imposing looking, and, you know.
Definitely.
I think that made it ripe for what that franchise would become, you know, taking that art and blowing out what they did well.
Yeah, I was actually just listening to, I don't know if it was a podcast or whatnot the other day, where they were talking about how Guerrilla said they wanted to move to Horizon because one of the main issues they made when they created the Killzone series is they didn't give the series a face other than the villain. Like, the Hellgas was the only face of the series. There's no hero to relate to or to follow a straight-through line for that franchise. It was just the villain. And that's even reflected in PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale, where they represented Killzone by one of the villains. Because there's no hero that people relate to at all. Like, I know there was heroes you played as in those games, but it wasn't like a Nathan Drake or Master Chief or any of those kind of things.
Not even a Gordon Freeman, who has no lines. No.
Right.
Not even a Gordon Freeman. Yeah, Gordon Freeman's iconic. Do we have any other games besides our two big ones left?
We got GoldenEye Rogue Agent. A lot of hate on this one. Basically, there's no continuity with GoldenEye whatsoever. It's just a name only. Basically, you're a rogue agent running around fighting against your bad guy, pretty much. And it's just, the gameplay was okay. But it definitely disappointed a lot of people.
Cash grab.
Yeah.
Using the name.
Just using that name. And this was an Activision joint, if I'm not mistaken, right? So that fits.
Right.
Man, Activision doing something unwieldy like that? That doesn't seem right.
Unheard of. Sure, Bobby Kotick.
The seeds were being planted.
Yeah, but Bobby Kotick was like, throw GoldenEye on it. They'll buy at least a couple
minutes. They'll buy it, yes. They love GoldenEye. You love GoldenEye, yes? You want GoldenEye? We'll give you GoldenEye. You buy?
This is what you said you wanted.
Yes. It's a different kind of GoldenEye. Yes.
Where does that bring us, Deontay?
All right, so we'll go with Half-Life 2 first. How does that sound?
Okay, if I had to guess, so Josh, not really a huge fan of this series. He did play 2. I love 2, but I know I'm not as big a fan as you two, so why don't you two take it over here, Half-Life 2.
Colin?
Okay, I'll start out. Half-Life 1 is my favorite of the two, but it doesn't beat Half-Life 2 by that much. This is an awesome game. I had a great experience with it back then. Recently replayed it this year and had an even better experience due to a lot of the adjustments the orange box had. Court and I are going to do a video on this later. Going to cover pretty much some of the same topics, but
we're looking forward to that. I love it.
This is basically it's a environmental storytelling at its best. You're a voiceless character. There are no cutscenes. You're going through this entire open but linear experience where everything happens to you in real time, and they tell the quality of story they tell with that is incredible. Not only that, you have the awesome physics. The gameplay is amazing. And it's just a really fun game.
Don't forget the music, man. The music is so stellar. You know, you talked a little bit about the open world design. It's got wide levels, and I say levels, you know, it's really just one level that's continuous. They give you the occasional title card, but it's really one level that you never take a break from. And yes, they are wide, but they are still so well paced where they use that space extremely well. You know, I'm specifically thinking right now about on the approach to Nova Prospect when you're on the beach and you have antlions in your corner. You're throwing antlions to attack dudes, and you can see the enemies coming like probably a good 2 football fields ahead of you. You can see where the outposts are, where you're going to be going. You can see the cover in front of you, but yet you're still going to make your way forward. And so in some regards, it feels like a lot of different first-person shooter subgenres are being realized at the same time within Half-Life 2.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Man. I I got to this one late. I played Half-Life 2 for the first time with the orange box. I never understood the appeal, but I never looked into the game at all. I, you know, I just knew there was Gordon Freeman's face on the front, and it was a shooter, and that's pretty much it. When I finally played through it, it's one of those things where, and I'm sure you all can relate for different games, it's, I played through it, I'm like, yeah, I see why this is as loved as it is, and I loved it, but it didn't hit with me in a way that made it a fan favorite, you know what I mean? Like, sometimes you just play a game and you're like, yep, this is everything everyone says it is, but it doesn't hit with me like it does others. So, you know, like maybe Halo hits with us, like I didn't get that way that Halo hits from Half-Life. But having said that, no complaints with this game, really. Half-Life 2 is it's like a cultural like touchstone for the industry. The physics, the game felt different, right? Like at a time where shooters were going in one direction, Valve just did its own thing, and it was really freaking cool. Gordon Freeman is an awesome character to step into, even though. Like, I don't know why. You know, he's got, like, an orange suit, and his face is...
He's got, like, a Home Depot kind of vibe to him that I feel like he'd help me out.
He's got, like, you know a help you find the saw in aisle four.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. He's like, it's
But it's cool stepping into his shoes, and, like, the people that surround... I think what it is the people that surround him have, like, an admiration for him, and you as the character feel that. Or, like, the villains will show that they fear your capability. So you kind of step into his shoes, kind of like Master Chief. I guess the difference is that, you know, you see Gordon's face and Gordon doesn't talk. But I love the game. The crowbar is iconic. The combine, like the way they look and act, was iconic to me. And one thing that I wish the Game Awards did, I guess they don't do anymore, is I don't know if you guys remember this. Did you guys ever watch the Game Awards when it used to be on G4? Or Spike
TV. Yeah, I remember the Spike TV.
They had an award. It was like the biggest award. It was Game of the Decade. And I think the show only ran long enough for them to do it once, and Jeff Keighley has not copied it. And the Game of the Decade went to Half-Life 2 for 2000.
Was Jeff Keighley running that at the time?
He was a part of it, but he wasn't running it.
Jeff sucks like Half-Life's cock. Like he loves Half-Life, bro.
He might have helped vote it in. But yeah, so you're taking all the games from 2000 to 2010, and Spike Game Awards said that was the game of the decade. I mean, you think of all the amazing games you love from that decade. Half-Life 2 is the one that got the award, and I think it deserves it. And I think for me, like, and I don't know if this has anything to do with why Diente likes the first one more, but for me, the reason I like Half-Life 1 hits harder with me, a lot harder than Half-Life 2. But for me, Half-Life 1 felt like an extension of the Quake games, or like the id Software type games. It was like that, but in a more story direction. Then when you get to Half-Life 2, it feels completely Valve. It's the Source Engine. It's their own baby. It doesn't really feel like it shares those roots with old school shooters as much, which made it not resonate with me as deeply. But Half-Life 2 and its episodes, great. I mean, it's deserving of the legacy. It's a great game. Josh, what'd you think? I mean, I know you beat it, you said, but you kind of feel like me, but even 2, right? You beat 2, yeah.
I mean, I'll say that when we get to it, because this is Half-Life 1, right?
No, we're talking 2, baby.
No, Half-Life 1 came out 5...
I'm out of my depth here. Sorry about that.
Josh is still a 98, guys.
Half-Life 2, you know, I never left. Half-Life 2 is... It just wasn't for me. I'm sure it's great. It just wasn't for me, because it was... the things I loved about Halo... Well, I should say the things I didn't like about Halo was that sometimes, you know, when you get past those levels or you're with the Marines and stuff, it gets kind of lonely. Cortana's with you, but it's this illusion very that lonely. Someone's with you. And it would get, like, you're just tooting up and down, like, Delta Halo and shit. But then, like, in Half-Life, if I ran into somebody, I was like, oh my, come to me, stay with me, please, talk to me. My character says jack shit. Yeah. I was like, give me something to go off on. And I'd run into that girl, I forget her name, she was really cool.
Alex.
And I'm honestly shocked that Josh doesn't love this game just for Alex's butt. Like, that seems like a Josh thing.
There's other games with better butts. Halo Reach, Cat has a good butt. She's got that booty principle, man. It's just really, really good. The good butthole energy, you know what I'm saying? But, dude, look, I mean... Alex was really cool. I thought she was an awesome character. When people, when I'd see her get voted with like cool female characters in certain games, it was always cool to see her because she wasn't like over sexualized or anything like that. She was just an actual cool person.
After he talks so, about cats.
I know, Libra. But hey, that I got to balance it out. I'm a Libra, baby. But so I liked like some of that gunplay at times in the games, but I just sucked at the puzzle solving. And it wasn't a case of like, this game's dumb. It was like, no, I'm dumb. Big brain. Why use big word when small word do trick? That was me to shoot trying to solve these. Yeah, I just wanted to go pew pew, but this game was like, nope, you got to solve this puzzle. You're at this house, okay? There's bushes, but you can't go through them. If you want to get beyond this level, you got to kind of create a pillar and you got to move yourself across the pillar. And I was like, what the fuck? Game FAQs, here I come. You know, They came in clutch. So look, it just, I could tell it was an amazing game for what it was, but my expectations were so blinded by the fact that I was expecting another Halo type of game and I got something completely different and my judgment was skewed on that, so I know it's objectively good.
I hate myself for getting the Orange Box in 2007 and thinking that Half-Life 2 was an old game that was packed in. That game was 3 years old. Like, it just goes to show how you're, like, me as a 15-year-old, the way my brain worked was that Half-Life 2 at that time was an old game. Like, it was new, man.
I mean, at the time, that was kind of how we all thought, honestly. It's not just because you're younger. As gamers, That's what it felt like. Oh, this is an old game. It's Half-Life 2. And I think part of the reason Half-Life 2 is so monumental is because of Gary's mod, the multiplayer suite, you know, Counter-Strike going to Source. The launch of Steam was with Half-Life 2, so that all was bundled in. And that
still seeing that affect the industry today.
Yeah, the Havoc physics engine has still, in my opinion, never been done better, or it's certainly never been done dramatically better, despite almost two decades of tech advancements. And my first experience with this game was right after having played Halo 2, and kind of like Josh, also kind of like you said, Brian, I was going into it hearing lots of hype from a lot of people who really like a lot of good games, and I'm expecting a Halo-type experience. And that's not what that game is. It's not what the first Half-Life is either. It has its own pace. It tells its own story, has its own style, and it's not really trying to do the big cinematic, bombastic movie type thing that I think we were kind of expecting it to do. So for that reason, it didn't really resonate with me either until the Orange Box came out. And I remember playing Portal and going from Portal. That kind of changed my thinking about how to approach these games. And so going
that
to Half-Life
to
2. Yeah, going from Portal to Half-Life 2 made it a lot more fun. And then Episode 1, I felt like was better. Like, it was, everything was just done a little bit better. And then Episode 2 is still my favorite piece of Half-Life content. And again, does everything better. I thought the vehicle stuff, the environments were all just a big step up. And after having gone through the whole Orange Box, I was like, Half-Life 2, one of the best games ever.
I don't know if this was a thing on message boards or not, but I could definitely picture there being like Halo 2 and Half-Life 2 and people being like Half-Life 2 is the gentleman's shooter and Halo 2 is for you action weebs, you know?
Yeah.
I pictured you with a big twirly mustache there, Brian.
Right. Because like Half-Life is like more highbrow. Like Halo 2 is much easier to be like, oh man, he flew on a space spickle and breaking
Halo 2, we drink Mountain Dew.
Yeah.
Half-Life 2, we have coffee, I guess. Fuck, I don't know.
Half-Life 2, your character, the protagonist, knows the periodic table by heart.
Yep. Not me. Not with this GED
education. I don't,
but this
guy does. Yeah. He wears glasses and looks smart.
Yeah, he works at the
Home Depot.
The Home Depot, you know?
They got that periodic table in the break room at the Home Depot.
He talked to me about physics for 4 hours. It was
Josh,
great.
I don't know if I'm like implanting your thought into my head or if I actually had this, but I feel like when I was a kid and I saw promotional art, I thought it had something to do with the hardware
Home Depot.
Too.
Yeah.
Because he had a crowbar.
He had a crowbar.
There's orange.
Game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come
and
on
he pushes
down.
That cart at the beginning of Half-Life 1. You know, that's how the whole thing starts. He's just helping a customer get their generator to the truck.
Come on down to Lowe's, bitch. Get yourself some fucking hacksaws and everything. We got all kinds of shit in here.
Got
a discount inside the sleeve of this game. Remember manuals? We got a little sleeve inside with the manual.
Josh has something completely different to add to his take on Half-Life than we do.
Well, you're making me think we need an episode, top 10 booty hole, good butthole energy episode. We need, like, a countdown of that. Like a draft. That's what I would do.
Corey's already curating his list.
Yeah. Mm. I'm really, well, I'm trying to think, what's the best butthole I've ever seen in a game?
I've never seen a butthole in a game.
Well, it's a matter of, you know, it's figuratively. Like, just good butthole.
Remember when I told you that Duke Nukem Forever had... Do you remember me telling you that Duke Nukem Forever had wall titties you could slap?
Yep. Them lip, like them lip hangers,
you're just
man.
Just playing
that's
Duke Nukem Forever, and you're going through this level, and you look at the wall, and there's a pair of boobs hanging off the wall, and a prompt comes up that says "slap wall titties." That's the kind of game that was. But anyway, any final slap. Thoughts on Half-Life 2 before we close out with talking about Halo 2?
For Half-Life 2, I came in as a Half-Life fanboy. I had played the original when it came out. I played the Opposing Force. I played Blue Shift. Played all the way through them. The original I actually played through twice. Once on PC and once on PlayStation 2. I was highly anticipating.
I'm telling you, that PS2 playthrough. That sounds so cool.
I was highly anticipating this game. It did not disappoint. And then went back and played it a few years later at the Orange Box, with the Orange Box. Got stuck in Ravenholm because I was like, man, this kind of sucks. But I went back through it recently, and that became my favorite level. Because
Ravenholm is very cool.
There is an achievement on the Orange Box where you have to do it without using anything but the gravity gun. And the way it made me think about stuff, the way it made me play completely differently, and how nerve-wracking it was just an elevated experience of that level for me. And like, you get to the end, one of the end parts, and you're waiting for the lift to come up, and you're running around in a circle waiting for those, trying not to get the fast zombies to chop you to death. And it's just nerve-wracking. And then just finding different ways to take out enemies with whatever you find lying on the ground, shooting it at them and cutting them in half. It was just like, man, this is awesome. So
the Orange Box has got monumental achievements. I think every developer should look at those achievements as the guidepost for what to strive for. Episode 2 has the one where you have to launch the gnome into space, a little yard gnome. You find him at the beginning of the game, and you got to keep him with you the whole time until you get to the base and stick him in that rocket before it shoots up
into
space.
I love that.
And it's just a little prop, you know. There's that game is full of props. There's all kinds of little physics objects.
Throwing the can at the combine guy.
Blows everywhere. Yeah. But it's, you got to keep this one little guy with you, and like, he becomes like a little baby. You know, you got to protect this guy.
You guys are making me self-aware how like I've complained in another episode where Jedi Survivor didn't like let me have my own agency about how I wanted to go about like finding and discovering things. And then when I'm talking about Half-Life 2, I'm like, "Ooh, this is hard. I can't do this." You know, they're giving me some agency there. I was like,
"That's too much.
Sometimes.
It's too much."
They expect me to
also
make a
Chun-Li,
bridge.
Chun-Li and Cammy. Number one pick from the newest Street Fighter. I was thinking about that. That's number one right there. I don't even need to make a top 10 now. That's number one. They're tied. Anyway.
I thought you're number one. You ever seen Voldo from Soul Calibur? I think
I'm about to. What's her name?
Voldo. V-O-L-D-O.
V-O-L-D-O from what game? Soul Calibur?
Soul Calibur. Oh yeah.
What the fuck is that thing? It looks like something from the backyard. Like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids or some shit. Is it like, which game specifically is it from?
Soul Calibur 2, how about that?
Soul Calibur 2. Okay,
sound
I'm
like
gonna...
that girl from Dr. Phil. Soul Calibur 2, how about that?
Oh, damn. Yeah, that's not that bad. That gave me the sniffles. My nose got running, that's for sure, man. Something got leaking there.
Voldo's a guy, Josh.
Voldo's a guy? Well, he's got some thunder cheeks, you know what? I don't swing that way, but you know what? He's got some thunder cheeks. I could only wish I had glutes that good, baby.
He looks like he lives
a... Are we on to Halo 2, guys?
I don't know how we go on to Halo 2 now. Now we can talk about Cortana. No, I'm just kidding. I won't do that. But yeah, Half-Life 2, though. I can see why people love it. When the Orange Box came out, that was just a phenomenal time because it was such a package. And seeing everything like land as well as it did with Portal, Team Fortress 2, and Half-Life 2, and obviously, like Corey said, with Garry's Mod and all that, that was just a really, really cool time. And even though I wasn't interested in any of that stuff, seeing that conversation come to console was very exciting.
Before we go into Halo 2,
I can be mature.
Who here likes Half-Life 2 more than Halo 2? Anyone?
Ooh, it's a wet.
I thought maybe one of
close.
You.
Oh, Corey, the hand
Corey?
Is coming up.
It's close.
Are you sure? Are you confident, Corey?
What? Yeah, I think I'd have to put Half-Life 2 above Halo 2. And that's an opinion years and years in the making.
That's fair. That's very fair. I mean, yeah, I can't blame it on that one at all. Okay, so Corey is our resident Half-Life 2 over Halo 2 here. But going into Halo 2, okay, this is what we're closing out with here. We got about 13 minutes to talk about. I know we could talk for an hour and 30, but we got 13 minutes. I'm going to start because I'm
a start. Selfish, it's my favorite game of all time.
You know, I told the story a million times. I'm going to tell the small version of it again. But I played this at a friend's house a month after it came out on his Xbox. And when I played Halo 2, it literally changed the entire hobby for me. It changed my entire passion to video games. I liked video games before Halo 2. Then I played Halo 2 and it became a passion. It was one of those things where you experience, because once again, to reiterate to anyone that happens to listen to this, hasn't listened to one of the other million episodes I've been on, I didn't play Halo 1. I played Halo 2 first. So I played Halo 2. It blew my mind. It was immediately like, every game I've ever played is shit compared to this one. That's how I felt. That's obviously hyperbolic as a kid, right? Like, I mean, I loved games like Ocarina of Time, stuff like that, but I was just like, screw all those games. It means nothing compared to what I'm experiencing right now. I got through Outskirts, and I got through Metropolis, and like experiencing like driving a Warthog and getting on the Scarab and all that stuff, fighting these elites and jackals and banshees, and that was just, and the cutscenes and the graphics, and I was just like, I was so blown away. And then I remember getting to the first Arbiter level, and as someone who'd never played Halo, knew really nothing about the series, this was their very first time playing it, I got to the Arbiter level and I was like, nah, I'm going to go back and play the human levels again. Like, I just went back and I just replayed Outskirts and or Cairo Station and Metropolis. But it was one of those things too where, like, you never want to say it out loud because it makes you feel like a weeb. But like, as a 12-year-old playing Halo 2, I just thought, Master Chief's the coolest character in the world. I want to be just like him. He's the best. You know, like, that's what I felt like. I was just like, there's no one.
That's very.
There's
very
no one more very, badass.
Very pure, Brian.
Yeah, there's no one more badass in the world than Master Chief. And I remember after playing Halo 2, this is really pathetic, but understand that I'm a child. Anytime like a Marine recruitment commercial would come up on TV, I would pay full attention and watch it because of the respect I had for Master Chief.
That's good.
I was a child.
That's good.
I was a child.
But that's ridiculous. Good, though. That's actually.
But like, I was just. I never played a game that I felt this way about. I just thought it was so amazing. And of course, that led to me going back to play Halo 1 and then, you know, obviously doing LAN parties and then being there at the midnight launch for Halo 3 when I was 15. I was just obsessed with the characters, the world. I couldn't believe it. I could not believe how good the game was. And obviously now, all these years later, like, I've played plenty of games that are as good as Halo 2, but like, at the time, it just felt on such another level to me. And the nice thing is, most of the criticisms of that game I was able to avoid because it was my first Halo. You know, you didn't care as much about having to play as the Arbiter. You didn't care as much about the ending when Halo 2 is your first Halo, or how the controls or the gravity was in that game compared to the first, because it was my first experience. So lots more I could say there, but just, I still think the narrative in a first-person shooter, to some extent, is unmatched. Like, obviously, Half-Life 2 does match it, but it goes for something completely different. But as far as, like, that bombastic action shooter with a really, like, depth of story and dialogue and almost a full movie's worth of cutscenes, I don't feel like I play anything on Halo 2's level. Over to you guys.
Yeah, you guys go ahead.
Sure. I played this. I was in my second year of college and had been extremely hyped for years on end. I had the moment of that Brian was just talking about, playing Halo 1, where then gaming goes from a hobby to a passion. And now I want to follow games. I want to know about the development. I want to read these weekly updates that they're putting out there because I want to know this stuff. You know, it makes me more knowledgeable about something that I love.
Sure.
So that hype cycle leading up to Halo 2, like, there's never been any product that human beings have created and put out there that I have been or will be that excited for ever. It was completely unparalleled. But I worked retail at the time when I was in college and got to take that game home early a few nights, or take it home and beat it a few nights before release. Got to play Xbox Live when they were testing it. Got to play with a few fucking Bungie employees. So all that stuff was amazing. And like, when the game came out, I had finished the campaign and, just like Brian said, had a lot of expectations going into it because I had played Combat Evolved probably like 100 or more times by that point. And so going into it, I was disappointed by a few things, and I think those things are all valid. They don't ruin the experience, but they keep it from being perfect. And that's sure. part of the reason I would say Half-Life 2, I think, is a better game, even if it's not quite as replayable. You know, Halo games, just they have something about you jump in, you do a level, you're out. And it definitely retained that from the first one. But, yeah, I definitely had some, like, initial disappointment with the campaign, but it is still my favorite multiplayer experience of all the Halos.
Favorite map?
Gosh, I can never remember the name of it. It's the DLC one that is the giant tower.
Relic? Was it Relic?
Probably Relic.
Like, you spawn, there's the beach, and there's, like, the down pelican?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep, yeah, that's Relic. Yep.
Hell yeah, bro. That's one of my favorites. Yeah.
Just the...
Yente, what about you?
I'm a fan of the art in that one, but Zanzibar is a close second. That E3 demo, oh my gosh, made me just want to wet my pants. I was so fucking hyped.
I love you for saying that, man. I get that.
I didn't even like Halo. Like I said, I got into Halo a month after Halo 2 came out, so I wasn't even into Halo, but I remember being 12 and just being in my parents' house and just feeling the weight of the release of Halo 2 from the talk about it.
Sure.
And I didn't even, like, that's not even me caring about it. I just felt it. It was there. It was, the presence was so heavy. I didn't know that a month later I was going to care about it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, over to you, Diente.
I'm sorry.
All right, I'll start. I'll go quick.
You're good.
We were pretty hyped about this one. We were doing the LAN parties with Halo 1, or CE, and Halo 2 came out, and that was started out multiplayer for me. We didn't have Xbox Live. I didn't have that for a long time, but we did the split screen with that. We did the LAN parties with that, and it introduced to the series the dual wielding, and then you had the noob combo, which was amazing at the time. That was the game changer, the equalizer. You know,
Corey's shaking his fist.
God, driving crazy.
And it works. It works in the campaign too. And this is the game where I started out. We decided to try to beat on a legendary. And every time we died, we had to take a shot of Monster, and we ended up staying up all night.
You're amazing. You're alive.
Yeah, my buddy puked it all up like immediately.
Stop living.
but went back to it, played it with Corey. That story is unrivaled, I think, in the Halo universe. It is a phenomenal story. In spite of Master Chief, Master Chief doesn't really contribute that much to the story. The rest of the characters, beacons in the Halo universe. You got Johnson. Awesome character in that game. They give him a lot of time. You got Miranda, awesome character in that game. And you got Arbiter. All of them brilliantly, brilliantly voice acted. And just the story was phenomenal. I know it disappointed a lot of people at the end because they didn't close it out. But from what I played with Corey, that story was amazing. And I do have my complaints about the campaign. They're not very significant. Like, it does feel more corridory than the rest of the Halo series. And you got that lunge. I know Corey talks about that a lot.
With the sword?
Just a regular melee lunge.
Oh, the melee.
Oh, you mean like the magnetism?
Yeah. And sometimes that can throw you off.
But, remember, that game was going to have melee combos, and that was something they talked up. And in that original campaign demo, you could see the guy do like three different punches on the brute. And yeah, that shit got cut. But I think that magnetism might have stemmed from there, and it's just one of those leftover pieces of boggy game code. That remained in Halo 2?
Obviously, it's all nostalgia and bias that plays into this, but still to this day, there's no single product on Earth that instills badass to me more than Halo 2. Like,
oh, yeah, it was edgy.
The
best way.
There's not a song, there's not a movie, there's not another game, there's nothing out there that just feels as wholly badass as Halo 2. It was coursing through the veins of that game. If I'm not even in a Halo mood and I start getting some of that Halo 2 soundtrack, seeing some of the original ads, I'm there. I'm immediately there again, and it's insane the how it makes me feel. And it's got other, it's more than just badassery too. It's just like moments that the campaign that just give me sheer wonder, like you know, the prophet saying, you know, this time none of you will be left behind. You know, like there's that. Just lines like that, or just like your inability to safeguard Halo was a colossal failure, and this is the mausoleum of the Arbiters, and you know,
over my head,
Chief's one little quip lines throughout the, you know, given the coming back their bomb, that stuff was so badass, you know. Boo. Him leaving Cortana behind and like not even fully grasping what was happening in the story in my first playthrough, but feeling the somberness as he leaves her behind and she watches him as the ship takes off.
See ya.
Like, it was just, a lot of emotions wrapped up in that game. And so much of it does have to do with the time and place in my life. You know, it's not going to, not everyone's going to feel that way, but man, the game reeks badassery all over it. So,
hell yeah,
Josh,
man.
You better, we got 3 minutes, so it's all yours.
Yes, it's all on to me now to shoulder it and sum it up. I love Halo 2.
2 hours
Halo
and 55 seconds.
A lot of fun. And, you know, the campaign, I think I'm having a bit of a revisionist history these days, and I think I was a little bit like Corey, where part of the reason I stopped right away the first day once I got to the Arbiter, because I was like, man, this is not like Halo 1 at all. And I'm here for, like, Master Chief, but the moment they switched over, it was like those first couple levels were like, okay, it's not as open, and the gameplay doesn't feel the same. It feels like a completely redesigned game, like, no carryover at all, you know? And once I got to that Arbiter level, I think I just... that was a moment where I was just like, it solidified like how much this is definitely a different Halo. And I was like, shit, well, I hope I like the rest of it, but I got to get through these Arbiter levels when I come back. And it wasn't something I was looking forward to. And then I get to the Delta Halo levels, and then you're right back to the Arbiter again. And it just did this snip, snap, snip, snap, you know? And
yeah,
I was like, yeah. And it was tough. But, you know, all jokes aside about some of the stuff I made earlier, Cortana, I really loved in this game. I thought she was fantastic. She really stood out well. And I loved that her and Chief had a really much better bond, whereas I didn't understand it at the time, being younger in Combat Evolved. I understood it a lot more in 2. And I just thought they made her just so fantastic. I loved her character in 2. And I think to this day, I think my favorite, like, Cortana design is from Halo 2. But on the multiplayer side, if I can just summarize a quick thing since we don't have much time. Guys, just to instill a bit of nostalgia, getting hit by the train on Terminal, running out in that open construction zone on, I'm forgetting the name of the map, but it's that big construction one. Do you guys remember that one?
Yep. Start behind the buildings.
Yeah. Burial Mounds, playing like Capture the Flag on it. Same with Coagulation, just Assault. Like Blood Gulch in the original. Rush into the base, you're like, go, 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 go! You know, that type of feeling. Zanzibar, playing One Flag CTF, spawning out with a ghost, trying to push up through the big cylindrical cylinder thing, and trying to get into their base as they're just trying to get their weapons
and
get their
bearings
together.
Hit that switch to open the side door.
The side
Escape
door
the flag.
On Ivory Tower, when you're up in that tower itself and people are coming up both sides and you're having, like, on SWAT battles, just pow, 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 you know, or a snipe battle and stuff like that. I mean, obviously on Lockout, just a ton of fun. Sanctuary, just having a lot of fun, especially Halo 2 Anniversary, but that's different. But just a ton of fun and a ton of different memories in these games. I mean, or in the maps, I'm sorry. And when the map packs came out, that was huge for me. Containment's another map I love. Lockout, like I said, there's so many good maps in there. The multiplayer was just so much fun to play, so rewarding. And the thing I loved about those maps is that they all told a story in universe without really spelling it out for you, and they left you to think about that and fill in the blanks. And I really, really had a fun time with that, especially when you go under, like, Lockout, and or when you're in Lockout and you go under where that lift is and you go into that tunnel where Shotgun spawns, and there's, like, those big bat tubes of, like, Flood, I think it is, or something like that. Stuff like that was just always something I really had a lot of fun with. And, you know, if you were able to, like, glitch out and super jump out of, like, Sanctuary and you're way up top, you could still see a little bit
limitless
beyond.
Limitless ways to have fun.
Yeah.
This was the first, like, Xbox Live experience.
Oh, and on turf with the Scarab? You know, the Vic fucking, like, arm just kind of resting there in that area?
I wish we had more time to talk about the multiplayer, because, like, this is, you know, I'm such a campaign guy, but this is my favorite multiplayer game of all time, and it's really the LAN parties and the split screen, obviously online as well. But
proximity chat, staying in the lobbies, talking shit for an hour after the game.
It's just nothing. That's why it's such a complete game, such a complete experience for me, because the multiplayer is just as good as the campaign to me. I know not everyone will agree with that opinion, but the whole package, the whole component.
We cannot quit on Halo 2 without mentioning I Love Bees. I don't think any of you guys
marketing campaign.
I remember that. I Love Bees. I didn't follow it, but I remember.
I remember seeing that ad in the movie theaters and being like, a video game that I'm excited for is in a movie theater. You
and
know?
A soundtrack and then, you're going to have in your car.
Yep.
This was a turning point.
It was just the I Love Bees, going through that stuff, you know, scouring HTML code, looking for clues with nerds online. That was the highbrow moment for Halo 2. That was how we got our Half-Life 2 kicks.
Halo 2, special. A special moment. 2004, one of the best years, some would probably say the best year in FPS history. We'll be back next time with 2005. Give us a little sizzle for 2005. I'm taking us out of here, Deontay.
Oh,
what do we?
Snap. Okay, 2005. We got.
Deontay's like, shit.
Fear. We got Quake 4. We got Pariah, Area 51, and another big one was Republic Commando.
Ooh, we're going to talk about the aliens.
Don't forget a couple launch titles, Call of Duty 2 and Perfect Dark Zero. Yeah. Oh, and Quake.
Prey. What about Prey?
Yeah, Prey 2006.
Oh, okay.
It is. Okay. I see that now.
And it got Far Cry.
All right, guys, that's a sizzle for next episode. We should get into a few more years than just one next time. 2004, it needed a special place because, let's face it, Half-Life 2 and Halo 2, and that's just... And then there's a bunch of other games in there. Great stuff. Guys, thank you for being here again.
Yeah,
appreciate
this was a blast.
Having
fun.
Deontay and Corey with us. Thank you guys for listening to another episode of the Sacred Icon Podcast. And as always, keep it sacred.